Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Washington, Republicans are glowering across the aisle over the $900 billion economic stimulus package. Democrats want to try to lift the U.S. economy out of its ditch. President Obama is saying we've got a difficult few days of haggling to come. But the debate is about more than a massive jolt from D.C. This hour, On Point former Labor Secretary Robert Reich on what he calls the real fight over the shape of the next American economy. You can join the conversation. What do you want from the federal government, from the Obama administration? A simple restart, thank you very much, or a reshaping of the U.S. economy? What do we need? Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Robert Reich. He was Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton and is now Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. His most recent book out in 2007 was Super Capitalism, the Transformation of Business Democracy in Everyday Life. Robert Reich, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you. So what's the real fight, sir?
Well, right now, at least the surface fight is between conservative Republicans and some conservative Democrats in the Senate over how much of that stimulus package is going to survive, particularly those longer-term objectives having to do with renewable energy and maybe some health care, broadband, some of the things that those who are concerned about all that money say are not directly related to the stimulus. They're not necessary right now. They're going to take just too many years to get implemented. We ought to strip them out of the bill, they say, and just have the bill focus on tax cuts and direct spending that's going to stimulate the economy. On the other hand, there are people who say, no, these longer-term public investments are quite critical.
You've got an essay in the Washington Post over the weekend, and the way I read you, Robert Reich, you're saying not just let's get the economy going again, but let's get a different economy going. What would it look like compared to where we've just been?
Well, maybe the best way of stating this, Tom, is to draw the contrast. There are a lot of people who do support the stimulus package, more or less, who say, look, we do need a large jolt to get the economy going back on track, to get the economy just simply on the track it was on before. I don't think that track is sustainable. It's not sustainable in terms of long-term growth. And it's not sustainable in terms of, just widening inequality of income and wealth. That cannot support long-term sustained growth. Climate change and our dependence on oil is also a structural problem that's growing. If we don't tackle that, we're not going to have long-term growth. The same thing with our crumbling infrastructure. If we don't get a handle on that, and that may take years to really do something about, we're not going to have long-term growth. And finally, our dysfunctional healthcare system. Now, any one of those is going to take possibly more than a year or two to get kind of reformed or even on the track to reform. My argument is that we can't get this economy going again in any way that's going to assure that the next downturn is not even worse than the current downturn, and that we can have sustainable growth until we really deal with these four apocalyptic problems in the economy, that is, widening inequality, climate change and our dependence on oil, a crumbling infrastructure, including education, I might add, and our dysfunctional healthcare system.
So you want to fix all of those. In your essay, you say that's the next fight, the fight after the stimulus plan. But isn't it all woven into the fight right now on Capitol Hill, Bob?
It really is, Tom. It's part of the fight right now. I think that those who support the stimulus that don't want to do anything beyond simply getting back on track, that is just put enough money into the system to get the economy to turn around in the short term, some of them might concede that these longer-term problems still remain and that we ought to deal with them later to the extent that we can afford to do so. But I really believe, and there are others like me, who believe that we cannot even pretend to get the economy back on track until we also get a start, at least a start, on these other basic problems.
Now, not everyone believes that, as you very well know. We had Martin Feldstein on, just a week ago, and he's come out since then saying the same thing he said here on Point, that he's for a stimulus, but he wants a stimulus just to get jobs and get the economy cranked up again. And these other issues, he says, no, get them out of here. This isn't the right time or place for them. What do you say to that?
Well, I respect that argument. I understand the argument. They're really another way of seeing the argument is to say that there are those who focus on the business cycle. You know, it goes up and down and up and down and has ever since economic data were being gathered and presumably since the founding and the early years of capitalism. And we are now in a particularly deep downturn. And these people, and I don't want to put any words into Marty Feldstein's mouth that he did not intend, but these people like Marty Feldstein, they would say, look, let's just do enough to get the business cycle to turn around and get the economy back again. But my point is that the deeper structural problems are growing. The reason that this downturn is as deep as it is in part because of these structural problems. And the reason that the recovery of the last 10 years, starting in after the recession of 2001, was as anemic as it was, is partly due to these structural problems. And then and unless we use this time as an opportunity to tackle them, we're just going to be left with an economy that is prone to even deeper recessions and weaker recoveries, and that's not going to help anybody.
You know, there's a less lofty critique than Martin Feldstein's, too. Trojan horse is the word thrown around a lot in Washington these days. Congressman John Culberson, Republican of Houston, says this legislation, he's talking about the stimulus package, is a Trojan horse that liberals are using to ultimately turn America into France. And you've heard the socialism charge in Washington, no doubt, Robert Reich. What do you say to it?
Well, I say baloney. You know, I could go on from that. That's not very
informative. Please do. We note baloney and maybe a Genoa salami, but
But socialism is just about as meaningful as baloney. Look, the reality is, and we knew this years ago. I was Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. When we got to town in 1993, Bill Clinton wanted to tackle many of these structural issues. We knew the infrastructure was crumbling. We knew that the healthcare system was dysfunctional. We knew that there was widening inequality and that our education system was not doing what it should be doing. And many people understood that climate change was becoming a major issue, although we didn't have the data at the time. All these things, though, could not be done in the Clinton administration.
Why?
Relatively few of them, because we faced a huge budget deficit, and we were coming out of a recession. At that time, Alan Greenspan said in no uncertain terms to President Bill Clinton, look, unless you get the deficit down and shelve all of these ambitious plans for dealing with these structural problems, I, Alan Greenspan, and the Fed, we are not going to reduce short-term interest rates, and therefore, because we're afraid of inflation, and therefore you're not going to have much of an economic recovery. Well, Bill Clinton did end up shelving most of those plans to deal with those structural problems. We did have a fairly good recovery. Alan Greenspan reduced short-term interest rates. But then we got to the end of the recovery. We had a big, as you remember, in 2000, a big budget surplus. But the underlying structural problems of the economy kept on widening and getting larger and larger. They were not in front of us every day, but we knew more people were losing accessibility or could not even afford access to health care. We knew the health care system was costing more and more. We knew that our bridges and highways and infrastructure systems were crumbling. We learned that the hard way during Hurricane Katrina and when that bridge in
Minneapolis,
St. Paul
collapsed
and we had water mains break in New York. We know that inequality is much wider now than it was then, and median wages, in fact, over the last 8 years of a so-called recovery, actually dropped, adjusted for inflation. Can't really buy very much if your median wages are dropping. The only way people kept on buying was borrowing deeper and going deeper and deeper into debt because their housing values allowed them to do that until the housing bubble burst. So you see, Tom, all of these things are structural problems that are getting worse. My point is that unless we use this opportunity, it doesn't have to be right this minute, but because everybody's focused on the economy and everybody wants to get on with repairing what needs to be repaired, this is a good opportunity to do what needs to be done over the long term as well as the short term.
Use this opportunity. Clearly, there's a lot of urgency. We've only got half a minute before a break here, but if you had a big deficit in Bill Clinton's term, first term, you've got a much bigger deficit now. Isn't that still a problem?
It's a problem, but remember, the deficit or even the cumulative debt is only part of the equation. The real issue is the debt in relationship to the size of the national economy. I mean, after World War II, the debt was about 120% of our entire economy. It went down considerably after that, not because we got control over the debt so much as because the economy grew. So if we can get back on a sustainable growth path, the debt or even the yearly deficit as a percentage of that economy will shrink again. If we can't, if we get don't do anything about these long-term structural problems, I'm afraid we're going to suffer over the long term bigger and bigger yearly deficits and larger cumulative debts.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with former Labor Secretary Robert Reich about what he calls the real fight in Washington to restore the economy or change it, rebuild it. Robert Reich joins us from Berkeley, California. Bob Reich, listen with me, if you would, to Minority Senate Leader Mitch McConnell. Here he is of Kentucky on Face the Nation on Sunday, ridiculing some of the provisions in the House stimulus package, saying that any money the taxpayers spend on fixing the economy should be temporary and targeted.
I doubt if the government buying $600 million worth of automobiles would provide the kind of stimulus that we're talking about here, and we certainly don't need honeybee insurance. Look, this thing needs to be targeted right at the problem. If we're going to spend this enormous amount of money, you know, this is huge money. This is someone said the other day that if you started the day Jesus Christ was born and spent $1 million every day since then, you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion. Looking at it another way, it's more than we've spent on all of the wars since 9/11. This is a lot of money.
Republican Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky on Sunday. Robert Reich, what do you make of this perspective? There's a lot of this talk right now in D.C.
Well, it's hard to tell, Tom, how many Republicans or even conservative Democrats just simply don't believe that a large stimulus package is necessary. That is, they don't buy the Keynesian idea, fundamental idea, that if consumers and businesses are not going to be able to buy enough to keep the economy going, that government has to be the purchaser of last resort. Even Marty Feldstein and others, conservative economists, believe that. But listening to Mitch McConnell, there's something else going on, I think, in the Republican Party. They may be willing to spend this much now, but they want to make sure that it is, as he said, temporary and targeted. Now, nobody's going to defend honeybee insurance. I don't know how that got in there. I think the House bill must have had some honeybee advocates putting certain things in. That stuff should be stripped out. But what you and I are talking about now, and what I think the Republicans like Mitch McConnell are most concerned about, are the larger and more ambitious things in the bill, like the beginnings of a change of the healthcare system, like infrastructure spending that may not be spent right away or maybe within the next 18 months, but it's still very critical, like broadband infrastructure coverage or getting on with the electric grid system. It's going to take some time. It may create some jobs in the immediate future, but most of the jobs probably toward 18 months, 2 years, maybe even after 2 years. some of the changes with regard to building schools or helping people get access to higher education. Well, we could go through the list.
Yep.
I think some of the Republicans are just nervous that this is the old Clinton-like Democratic agenda that was never fully implemented coming in through the back door.
Okay, Mitch McConnell's a Republican. What about Bill Clinton's former budget director, Alice Rivlin? She's quoted in the Post, where your essay was, saying, such a long-term investment program should not be put together hastily and lumped in with the anti-recession package. She's saying, slow down, do these things, do them if you like, but do them separately. Don't jumble these things up.
Well, Alice may be right, but she's talking, I think, more as a matter of politics than as necessarily a matter of economics. I mean, they need to be done. I think that, again, most economists who understand the structural flaws in the economy, the problem of, our dependence on oil, climate change, and so forth, most of them do understand and agree that something needs to be done. But there is a dispute as to politically whether it's wise to do it now as part, or at least begin it now as part of the stimulus package, or wait until the economy is, as some of them believe, and perhaps she is one of them, that we could get on track and then when employment is temporarily restored. And I say temporarily because I think these structural problems are going to tip us over the edge again in not too many years if we get back on the old track. Maybe then deal with them. But I think, Tom, the issue politically is that if you wait and you get people get relieved because the economy seems to be back on track, unemployment starts dropping maybe a year or maybe a year and a half from now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average goes up, people breathe a huge sigh of relief, that may mean less political capital, political will, willingness on the part of the public to grapple with these very deep problematic structural programs. You know, they problems. Mm. A lot of people would just like to shrug their shoulders and say, okay, well, back to business as usual. We don't have to deal with them. We can have a period like the late 90s that seemed prosperous until we once again had to face these structural fragilities that became even more fragile.
Are you sure that Barack Obama is on board with your view of the world, your sort of prescription here? What about Larry Summers, his top economic advisor? We're reading reports of Summers pushing back on infrastructure spending. Obama has spoken out strongly for these things, and yet he's ready to deal with Republicans. Are you sure he's in your corner?
Well, I don't know. I can't be sure. Nobody can be sure of anything in politics, Tom. Mm-hmm. But certainly during the campaign and in the last couple of months of the campaign, when the economy went into a tailspin, the president-elect, even after he was elected in November and December, made it very clear that the stimulus package would be both designed for short-term Keynesian stimulus and also to get a kind of down payment on these big structural issues. But in an effort to mollify the Republicans and to get broader-based support for the stimulus, it may very well be and I don't know this for sure, but there are some signs that the president is willing to pull back on this longer-term agenda and pare it back, not necessarily because he needs Republican votes. He only needs a couple of Republican mm-hmm. votes to get up to the magic number of 60 in the mm-hmm. Senate, but because he may feel that he wants the public to have the confidence that all of the government, or at least a majority of Republicans, are behind this. This is not a partisan deal. I respect that and understand that political judgment, but I think it would be unfortunate if we didn't get on with some of these big structural issues. But I worry that we're just not going to have, and he is not going to have, mm. quite the political mandate mm-hmm. to do this when times look like they return back to normal.
Former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich is with us today. Let's get the public in here right now from Moline, Illinois. Tim is calling. Tim, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My point is simply that yes, we do need some changes. We need to take this opportunity to make some changes. But the thing is that we always seem to overreact. And our overreaction seems to send a shock to not only our target, but to intertwined economic systems throughout the world.
But what would overreaction be here, Tim? Too much government, or what would it be?
I think that we need a balance, and so far we haven't been able to find that balance between government control and our large corporation control. We've seen the recent decline in control of our industries and our big businesses, and especially the finance sector, which has caused big problems.
Sure has. Tim, let us pick it up right there. I think you put a good dynamic, interesting one on the table. Robert Reich, what do you say? How do we keep from overreacting here and going from sort of, let's say, the financial industry spinning clearly out of control to too much government intervention?
Well, I think Tim has a very good point. We do tend to cycle back and forth between too much regulation, arguably, that makes us less competitive, and then kind of laissez-faire, too little regulation that allows excesses to occur in the business community and also on Wall Street. And that cycle can be seen historically. But, Tim, what I'm talking about is less an issue of regulation. And we can get back to what is the right combination of smart regulation for Wall Street. Then it is a matter of public investment in things that we have known for years we needed to address, such as making the healthcare system functional and accessible, or dealing with our crumbling infrastructure, or dealing with climate change and getting renewable resources and renewable sources of energy in place of oil, and a cap and trade or a cap and dividend system, or most fundamentally, from my standpoint, dealing with this problem of widening inequality of income and wealth that has been with us for 35 years and is coming back to haunt us, because when the top 1% take home over 20% of all of national income, as they have been doing for the last few years, there just is not that much left in the middle to buy all the goods and services that we are producing, which gets us into trouble repeatedly. Rather than think of this as more or less government, I think of public investment as the kind of fundamental things that we ought to be doing, regardless of where we are in the business cycle. But we have not been able to do them because basically we don't have the political will to do them when things are good. And when things are bad, everybody worries about, you know, public debt.
Mm. Let's get a call from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Robert. Robert, you're on the air with Bob Reich.
How you doing?
We're very, very well. What are you thinking?
I've got a couple of points. The first is the part in the stimulus package where it is stating that it should the money should be American bought materials. I agree with that 100%, and I think all of Congress and the House of Representatives ought to get on board with it. It's American taxpayers' dollars. It's not money from foreign countries. This is money that the hardworking Americans have placed into the system that is going to bail this country out of the hole that it's in.
So when we spend these billions, you say spend them on American-made products, and bravo. What's your second point, Robert?
By doing that, it will eventually help the world, because the American people start spending more money at Walmarts and other places. And by doing that, you know, here comes your import back into the system.
So you say the world should welcome it. If I want to pick it up right there. Robert Reich, how about it? There are Buy American provisions floating at the heart of this thing, steel, even uniforms and textiles used to put uniforms on the Transportation Security Administration folks. Buy American is in here. Are you for that, or do we risk setting off another round of protectionism, Smoot-Hawley style?
Well, I'm basically for those Buy America provisions, Tom and Robert. I agree with you, Robert, because this is not kind of an ordinary time, and taxpayers are ponying up some $800 or $900 billion for this stimulus, and we are doing it for the purposes of creating jobs here in the United States and having as much of a multiplier effect as we can. If other nations don't like it, they should have an incentive, and that would be good for everyone, to have their own stimulus programs and get their own jobs going. Now, this does sound quite protectionist, and under normal circumstances, I would never mention make this argument. The Buy America provisions, by the way, are already in the law. That is, when the federal government contracts for whatever it's contracting for, it has got to get a special exemption from the Buy American provisions if it wants to buy, fulfill an American contract abroad.
But this is a big re-up, and you're hearing all over the world that this violates WTO, that this sets off a new Smoot-Hawley around just 1930s, no ordinary time, but the Depression wasn't an ordinary time either, and global trade collapsed.
Well, nobody here, I don't think, nobody in Washington wants a trade war. This is different. This is not protectionism per se. This isn't saying let's trade less. This is saying that when we as Americans, as American taxpayers, finance a huge stimulus package for the purpose of creating jobs, let's keep the Buy America provisions that are already in the law. Let's keep them in effect and buy American-based products, American steel, American garments, because that will have the biggest multiplier effect on jobs here in the United States. And that, to me, again, it's a close call, Tom. You don't want to create an international, aggravate international tensions and cause a kind of a trade war.
But you could, and you know it's happened before.
It has happened. Yes, it has happened before. I was taking a sip of coffee when you,
sorry,
you got me.
Caught you.
It has happened before, but here in this particular instance, it would be terrific, for example, if Germany, which has not yet sought fit to stimulate its economy very much, although the European economy is in terrible shape, almost as bad, in fact, some would say worse shape than the United States economy right now in terms of there being insufficient demand for goods and services. Germany, the biggest economy in Europe, ought to have a big stimulus program. And if our stimulus, coupled with our Buy America provisions, gets Germany to have a big stimulus program, even if it has Buy European provisions in its stimulus program, that's good. That's not bad.
That's good. That's not bad. But who knows where we're going? What's your confidence level in this moving toward the structural prescription, ultimately, in Washington? Do you feel it going that way? Do you feel the determination in the Democratic Party? You know, you've got some naysayers even there to some of this spending right now.
Yeah, I think, Tom, that there probably are enough votes to get this down, let's call it a down payment of some of the big structural problems we face with regard to the infrastructure, the environment, education, dysfunctional healthcare system, and so forth. How much the Obama administration is going to be willing to compromise in order to get more Republican votes and therefore cut back on these long-term agenda items is anybody's guess. Now, you began to ask a slightly different question, I thought, which is one that bedevils this entire conversation, and that is, how confident am I, or how confident is anyone, that all of this is really going to get the economy back to anywhere it ought to be 3 or 4 or 5 years from now? And the problem here is we've never been quite here before. Nobody knows very much about what's happening. If somebody tells you, who sounds very official, and or an economist who's has loads of data in his or her arms, oh, I know exactly what's happening, watch your wallet. Because they don't. We've never been here before, and there's a great deal of uncertainty. Whatever we do, we need to do in the spirit of, look, we're not 100% sure this is going to work. If it doesn't work, let's change our direction. This is one of the great strengths of the Franklin D. Roosevelt administration. Let's try something, but if it's not working, let's try something else.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with former Labor Secretary Robert Reich about what he calls the real fight in Washington, whether to restore the economy or change it, rebuild it. He calls himself a structuralist. He wants to go not at business cycles, but at the structure of the economy. Here's President Obama meeting with House and Senate Republicans last week. Between meetings, he talked about the kind of stimulus package he's after.
The American people expect action. They want us to put together a recovery package that puts people back to work, that creates investments that assure our long-term energy independence, an effective healthcare system, an education system that works. They want our infrastructure rebuilt, and they want it done wisely so that we're not wasting taxpayer money.
Robert Reich joins us from Berkeley, California. Bob, that sounds like your kind of message, but let's hear what you and our listeners have to say. Bridget in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Bob Reich.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I read your blog all the time. I'm an advocate follower, and I remember one entry talking about the fact that trust is what is missing the most and why the crisis happened in the first place. And I was wondering if you think that there's anything that the Obama administration is doing or anything in the stimulus package that is speaking to that need for trust.
Robert Reich?
Bridget, not yet. The trust problem, I think, is at the core of what happened to Wall Street. And until there are regulations that overcome the conflicts of interest on Wall Street, that enable people to once again trust that Wall Street is disclosing everything it needs to disclose, is not working off the balance sheets, is taking its shareholders and depositors and all of us as its major responsibility, then that trust level is going to continue to be very low. And that means that most of us are not going to get back in the stock market. We're not going to trust that the financial markets are working for us. So that's a different issue. I think it's as important in many ways as the issues we're talking about on the demand side of the equation. Or perhaps let's just step back for a second, Bridget. You've got all of these credit problems that are brewing, and very soon the White House and Tim Geithner from the Treasury Department are going to go to Congress and ask for more money for the banks. And my view is that more money is probably not going to help our banking system very much. It's kind of a bottomless pit where taxpayers are going to be paying more and more until we have regulations that really do create and revive public trust in our financial system. But then at the same time, you've got this huge shortfall on the demand side of the equation, where right now the economy could, if people were most people were employed and most factories and offices were going full speed ahead, generate about $15 trillion of goods and services a year. But because consumers have pulled back and businesses have pulled back and people are not buying and businesses are not buying, there's a shortfall of probably in the range of $1.5 trillion a year relative to what we could produce. And that shortfall needs to be filled in by government. That's where even many Republicans and many conservative economists agree with liberals that we have got to have a big stimulus package. So our discussion right now is the content of that stimulus package. How much of that stimulus package should be just to get the economy back on track, just short term, as Mitch McConnell said, temporary and targeted, or how much should be also focused on these big long-term looming larger and larger structural problems that Obama, when he talks about the long term, also wants to focus on. But I think that there is a real debate going on in Washington as to whether those long-term investments, public investments, should be stripped from the stimulus.
Bridget, thanks for your call. On a similar thing, we've got Don in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Don, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My issue is partly addressed in the comments that just passed. But it seems that I believe that we will need some severe regulations because we seem to be a victim. It was discussed earlier about the balance and cycles, and the cycles we have seem to be cycles of speculation followed by bust. And whether you talk about the railroads in the 1900s or the dot-com in the 90s, or you talk about the housing bubble now, we are always a victim of speculation. So don't we in the future need regulations that address these issues of speculation? And until we somehow dampen speculation, how will we ever get the trust that you just talked about?
Don, maybe that's just part and parcel of our system, and it's painful, but we end up better in spite of it. What do you think? Or Bob, to you.
I didn't mean to interrupt Don, but Don is, I think, absolutely right. We do have to have more and better, smarter regulation of Wall Street, not necessarily more intrusive government, but certainly regulations that overcome things such as credit rating agencies being paid by the companies whose securities the credit rating agencies are rating. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest. Or executives and traders on Wall Street who are being paid not because of the long-term returns they're getting, but because of very, very short-term, quarter-to-quarter returns they're getting because they are speculating like mad with other people's money. There are things that can and should be done. But, Don, you know, there are two fundamentally different views of what got us into this mess. One view is that this housing bubble burst and the credit markets thereby collapsed, and most of us, because we feel poorer, now are not going to the malls, and we've got to somehow deal with the fallout from all of that mess. The other view, and I have to say that I'm a little bit more of this second view I'm about to give you, is that although the bursting of the housing bubble was the proximate cause, the underlying problem has more to do with the decline of median wages or the stagnation of American median wages. People could borrow more and more money over the last 5 or 6 years because their housing values were going up. And that kind of masked the fact that they really didn't have the money. Median wages were actually declining, adjusted for inflation, this decade. So that when the bubble burst, people could not borrow anymore, and that meant that they had to live within their means, which is well and good. But the fundamental problem is that their means have been dropping. Most of the income in this country has been going increasingly to people who are very wealthy. That has a lot to do with structure of the economy. I'm not blaming anybody, but I'm just saying that the last time in our history where we had something in the order of 23% of national income going to the top 1%, such as we did last year, was in 1928. And we know what happened in 1929. So inequality is a structural problem that haunts us, and if we don't do something or at least begin to do something about it, we are going to find ourselves with an ever more fragile economy next time around.
Speaking of borrowing, and a lot of borrowing, what if China took the attitude that the U.S. is doing too much borrowing, that there's a lot of wealth concentrated here that might be spread around the world, spread to some Chinese folks? I mean, your structural spending, very large structural spending and sort of rebuilding, depends on a lot of borrowing from China, doesn't it? Are you confident that they'll come through with that? Why should they?
I'm not 100% confident, Tom, that they will continue to come through. They are finding that their own growth is slowing down, obviously because their exports are slowing down because the rest of the world doesn't have the money to buy them. And that means that instead of growing at about 11% a year, the Chinese economy is growing something in the order of 7 or 8% now, which sounds like a lot of growth, but it's not really enough given the size of their population and how many workers are coming in from the countryside expecting to do better. So they are going to stimulate their economy. They're in the process of a big economic stimulus. Will they continue to lend us money? Well, yes, they probably will, because they don't want our economy to implode. They don't want to be left holding the bag of a lot of worthless dollars. They've lent us so much money up till now. It would be the last thing they want is for us to implode. We're mutually interdependent and mutually, I suppose we could mutually do a lot of damage to each other's economy. But let me just say this. Here's the thing that we're not really truly facing. The Federal Reserve Board is now lending our banks, our financial institutions, opening its credit window, taking as collateral, guaranteeing all sorts of notes and securities to the tune of about $2.5 trillion. Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Okay, yes,
holding your
we
chair?
Are. Yeah.
$2.5 trillion. Now, you know, it's hard enough to get your head around a million, let alone a billion, let alone 100 billion or 800 billion. But when we're talking about $2.5 trillion, we're borrowing a lot from the Chinese. We're potentially borrowing a lot from the Chinese and the Japanese and the Middle East. And then on top of that, of course, we've got the $350 billion so far bailout of Wall Street that may go much higher. In fact, the second half of that has already been enacted. So that puts us up to about 700. It'll be 800 billion. My information is that the Treasury Secretary is going to go back to Congress and ask for much, much more. And that's just to bail out Wall Street. And then on top of all of that, you've got the stimulus package that is around 800 or 900 billion and may have to be higher to really stimulate the economy.
And you're saying on top of that, go for structural change.
And then on top of that, structural
change. Does this add up?
But here's the argument on the other side. Mm. If you do not make the structural changes, if you do not do anything about our dependence on foreign oil, our crumbling infrastructure, of a dysfunctional healthcare system, an educational system that is not really educating, we are going to be even in deeper trouble the next downturn of the business cycle. So, yes, it means a lot of borrowing, but it's a lot of borrowing if a lot of borrowing is put into public investment that actually grows this economy, because we are on a more sustainable path of growth, then we can manage it. If it's just bailing out Wall Street or bailing out the auto industry or just bailing out various sectors of the economy that should never have got into trouble in the first place if they knew what they were doing in the first place, then we're going to get into deeper and deeper problems in the future.
Let's see if we can get another call or two here. Elizabeth in Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air with Robert Reich.
Thank you. I enjoyed this a lot. I agree with you completely. I have a doctorate in zoology, which is rare for women, at least at the time that I got it. I was the first in UC Davis to get that.
Good for you.
I have been a financial thank you. I've been a financial planner for the last few years, but I did give up my securities licenses recently, along with one-third of the people who had them. I see a change coming. I think people want it. That's the theme. But I see the same old politics, partisan politics, certainly in South Carolina. I was in California, moved here a year and a half ago. They want to keep doing the Republican Bush policies, and I don't get it. I mean, we're out of touch with the world in terms of global warming, in terms of health policies and health coverage for our population. How do we convince them? How do we try to get more partisanship to get something different going?
Elizabeth, let us hold that thought right there. If we may get one more call right here, Damien in New Haven, Connecticut. Damien, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks Hi. For giving me a moment.
Yeah.
And thank you for Professor Reich. I'm really enjoying this. I think my comment actually really compliments the woman who just spoke. And I'm hoping that somebody can speak to the will of the people a little bit. I mean, the fact that a majority of American voters voted Obama in, I think, needs attention in this conversation, I think, not from Professor Reich, because I think he's already doing that, but from legislators and economists that are debating things in the absence of acknowledging what I think is an important reality, and that is that Obama was voted into position for a desire for progressive change, and I wish that were more part of the conversation in the nation's capital. Right,
Damien,
now.
Our time is short, but thank you so much, Robert Reich. What do you say to Damien and Elizabeth?
Well, I would say bravo to both of them. I agree with Elizabeth and Damien entirely. Barack Obama was voted in by a very significant majority of Americans, and the same significant majority wants major change. Doesn't simply want to get the economy back to where it was, back to the old track, but I would say wants a brand new track that is much more sustainable in terms of the environment and health care and education and overcoming widening inequality and dealing with our crumbling infrastructure. So if the Republicans won't come around, then my view would be, and Elizabeth and Damien, you've given me an entree to say what I really believe here politically, because I'm always a little bit shy to talk about politics when I'm asked to talk about economics. But my view is Obama and company ought to just go for it. Get the votes they need. If the Republicans don't want to go along with them, too bad. Let the Republicans be on the wrong side of history.
Simple as that.
Well, it's not as simple as that, Tom. That's the problem. Because, you know, you need at least a couple of Republican votes and maybe some Democrats who are holding out in the Senate. And then, even then, you want the country to feel confident that the government is solidly behind this change agenda. And if Republicans are not going to be, that's going to cause some nervousness and anxiety. What are they not going to be for next? But when push comes to shove, I would say you've got to do something about these fundamental structural problems. It is not a matter simply of going back to business as usual or the old economy we had before or just having a stimulus that gets us back there, because the back there was one of the problems. It was the old track that got us into the mess we are in now.
Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, joining us today from Berkeley, California. Bob Reich, it's great to talk with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
Bye. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rally, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Kathy Corman and Sam Sanders. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.